Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit KYWNewsRadio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. Sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about. Looks like Philadelphia has a budget.
It's definitely a loss for the mayor.
Pat Loeb will have all the details. Then Jim Melwert will tell us about a push in Harrisburg to restrict access to cell phones for students in public schools.
This one really split both parties in support and in opposition.
Mike Daugherty will have the latest on the controversy surrounding a Camden scrapyard that has had serious problems with fires.
There is one thing that is constantly brought up, and that's lithium batteries.
Then Pat Loeb returns to break down Philadelphia's readiness to host the World Cup.
Well, it's an all-city effort. That means every department contributed their part.
The Eagles finally traded star wide receiver A.J. Brown.
They got a first-round pick in the 2028 draft, as well as a fifth-rounder in the 2027 draft.
Dave Uram will have more on the deal with New England. And then Justin Udo tells us about a local track star headed to the Ivy League.
A psychology major in looking at adding neuroscience as a concentration.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, and we will get started right after this.
We just let billion-dollar tech companies play the city of Philadelphia and trick us.
This is about individuals in the city of Philadelphia who are dealing with affordability crisis.
We start this edition of The Week in Philly with the budget. On Thursday, Philadelphia City Council greenlit a new budget, to the surprise of many, with no new taxes. For more, let's bring in KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb. And Pat, first off, this was not the final vote we saw this week, correct? Kind of explain the procedure here.
Right. Everything council passes has to first be approved by a committee. So for the budget, it's the committee of the whole council. So they hold hearings for weeks, then negotiate changes, then vote as a committee. And then final approval is in a regular council session, which will be next week, which is their last session before they break for summer recess.
So in this budget, Mayor Sherelle Parker was looking to add several new taxes, and City Council rebuffed her on all fronts. Give us the details here. It sounds like the lobbying was pretty intense.
Right. She proposed three taxes. Each was targeted to some need. A delivery tax would have funded street repairs. A hotel tax, which later included home shares, would have funded services to end street homelessness. And then a rideshare tax, which was really the sticking point, because Uber ran a very effective campaign that its riders are low income and they would suffer when they passed this tax along.
Dear Mayor Parker, as a Philadelphia rider, I rely on rideshare for work, appointments, and
now
daily
Uber is a $146 billion corporation. But even the most progressive council members, Kendra Brooks of the Working Families Party, who got into politics as a public school advocate, told me that adding $1 to an Uber ride would hurt families and counteract whatever good it did for the schools. So the mayor let go of the delivery tax, then the hotel tax. She dug in her heels on the Uber tax and lost, which she freely acknowledged after the vote. But she said the winners were billionaire tech companies who, she said, should have been able to absorb this extra tax because they make money in Philadelphia on Philadelphians and pay almost no local taxes.
So no new taxes. Now, specifically that rideshare tax, the goal of that was to help fix the structural deficit the school district was facing. So you're not getting money from that. How does the budget address that?
It really doesn't, but council thinks it did. They added $50 million to the city's contribution to the school district for this year. But that's not a solution for the structural deficit. I have to say the district did not help itself by announcing that it was closing 17 schools right in the middle of budget negotiations. But they say that structural deficit is still looming. They still have to go ahead with cutting positions, which they're doing to help address that deficit.
Every year, our cost will grow faster than our revenue stream. That's why it's so important to have the recurring revenue.
So what else is in this budget of note, and how big is it?
It's $7.1 billion. It started out when she introduced it in March at $6.9 billion, but a little bit of money got added to just about every department of the government through the course of this process. So, yeah, for the first time, the city budget is over $7 billion. It includes money for the mayor's home initiative for affordable housing. There's a lot of workforce development money in there. There's extra money for neighborhood help centers, and there's money for free SEPTA fares for city workers and low-income Philadelphians, apropos of Uber's claim about its ridership.
I want to look at this now politically. Mayor Sherelle Parker wants all these taxes and doesn't get any of them. To me, from the outside, this seems like a very bad loss for the mayor. Am I overstating?
No, it's definitely a loss for the mayor. It really affected her relationship with council. They felt that she was being unreasonable, and they're kind of angry at her. Both sides have said, we just disagree. We're not in conflict. But she really spun this as council kind of being duped by Uber. And so I think there are going to be some bad feelings for a while. However, council's on summer recess, so she doesn't need anything from them immediately.
And once again, this passed out of the committee of the whole. You said the final vote will be this coming week from council, but it's basically the same thing. We're not expecting anything to change, right?
No. In fact, under the city charter, they can't change anything in the budget and still have it passed next week. So I think we're looking at, a unanimous passage for this budget.
All right. Thank you very much, Pat. KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb, who will be coming back later on in the show to talk World Cup preparations. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
I'm calling on the members of the General Assembly to put a bill on my desk to ban cell phones while kids are in school. Students need to spend less time focused on their phones and more time focused on learning, on talking to their friends face to face, and on developing the critical skills that they will need later in life.
Welcome back to the Week in Philly. And this week, the State House in Harrisburg moved legislation addressing cell phones in school. For more, let's bring in KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melwert. Jim, dig into this legislation. What exactly would it do?
Yeah, this bill requires, with some exceptions like individual education plans or teaching plans that require the use of a phone, that all school districts implement policies that restrict students' access to their phones, not just during class time, but from the opening bell to the end of the school day. So we're talking study hall, lunch, walking the halls, in what's become known as a bell-to-bell ban, prime sponsor Democrat Mandy Steele.
The kids can learn and play and talk and laugh, negotiate conflict, make eye contact, be curious, be kids again. Free from the most addictive and harmful device that humanity has ever been subjected to.
Taking a slightly different approach, Republican firebrand Russ Diamond says he was looking around during that day's session. This vote was toward the end of the session. He saw how many of his colleagues were more focused on their phones than on debate or speeches on the State House floor.
Look, if we as adults can't pay attention here, how do we expect children to be paying attention in school?
Important to say the bill does not say exactly how districts have to word their policy. It just says there has to be one.
Members that were opposed to this, what were the arguments against it?
They vary. The most prominent ones were that this would take control away from local school boards and would have Harrisburg making decisions for people who know their district or area best. One of the more poignant, I guess, anti-statements came from Monroe County Democrat Maureen Madden, who says she talked with parents of students who were killed in a shooting in Parkland, Florida, and those parents told her their last words with their children were on their kids' phones while they were hiding.
Until we can keep our children safe in school, I want them to have their cell phone. I want them to be able to call their parents for help or simply to say goodbye.
Central PA Democrat Nikki Rivera, who taught for 30 years and served on the school board, says she wrestled with the vote, finally decided to vote in favor, but added she feels this is only treating a symptom, and she hopes the legislature will continue to work towards
contributing to what the actual causes are for the cell phone abuse versus what the school rules should be.
Now, this passed the House on a bipartisan basis, correct? Which is rare. What was the breakdown?
Yeah, that might be the most fascinating part of this. Generally, when we say bipartisan, it's one party pretty much in full support or close to full support, and the other party has members who join in. This one really split both parties in support and in opposition. It passed easily 126 to 75, but in a chamber with 102 Democrats and 99 Republicans, 80% of Democrats were in favor while 44% of Republicans supported. So an 80-20 split on the Democratic side, 56-44 with Republicans. Extremely rare to see that kind of split in the Pennsylvania legislature. Most votes, again, go with a party line or at least a lot more closely than this.
What's next? And what are the chances this gets across the finish line?
Those chances are extremely high. The Senate passed a similar version earlier this year, 46-1. So now both chambers will just have to figure it out on the margins. Governor Shapiro called for these bell-to-bell bans in his budget address, so it has his support as well. When it gets to his desk, he'll sign it.
Also this week, a bill passed in the House dealing with allowing access to cannabis for terminally ill patients in hospitals. What are the details?
Yeah, this would allow terminally ill patients access to medical cannabis while in the hospital in an oral non-smoking form. It comes from Western PA State Rep Dan Frankel. And speaking in favor of his bill on the floor, he shared a story of a man in his 40s who was dying of pancreatic cancer. And while in the hospital in a brief moment of consciousness, and what Frankel says the man's father describes as a near comatose state due to fentanyl for the pain, the man begged his father to get him off opioids so he didn't spend his final weeks asleep so he could say goodbye to his and spend time with his family in those final weeks. But in the hospital, which Frankel didn't name, he was prohibited cannabis, so he had to be transferred to another facility where they were able to use a cannabis spray to manage his pain.
So what is next for this?
It passed the House 174-27 with the bipartisan support, the more typical, unlike what we talked about earlier. It heads to the state Senate. I have not checked out what kind of support it will have there. You would think with that kind of bipartisan support, it has a good chance in the Senate. There are a lot of more even-minded Republican senators who are in favor of allowing some reduced restrictions on cannabis. However, there is still a solid chunk that feels, you know, the kind of the holdover from the 60s and 70s of weed is the devil. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the Senate. But again, I would think with the bipartisan support that we saw in the House, it has a very good chance. And with a medical marijuana policy already in Pennsylvania, it would have a very good chance in the Senate.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim. That's KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melwert joining us. Time for another break. We will continue on this edition of The Week in Philly right after this. It's The Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
After numerous fires, numerous attempts to help EMR prevent future fires, here we are again.
Majority of us here today, convicted felons. And EMR gave us a chance to society with a career for our families and ourselves.
We are back on The Week in Philly, and now let's go to Camden, where a scrapyard has become the center of attention. For more, let's bring in KYW South Jersey reporter Mike Daugherty. And Mike, first, let's set the table here. What is the EMR scrapyard?
Yeah, it's a recycling center. They kind of
taking all sorts of junk, old appliances, cars, iron, steel, aluminum, all that kind of stuff. And then from there, it gets processed and sorted by category, and then often ends up inside of an industrial shredder. Eventually, these materials are processed and sold to global manufacturers. They melt down the bundles into liquid and form all sorts of new metal products.
So EMR jumped into the headlines after it caught fire recently, a little more than a week ago. And it's not just like the fire was a one-off. This has become an all too common occurrence, right?
Yeah, there have been at least a dozen or so fires in the last 5 years. Some of these have gotten really big, and city officials, neighbors, state lawmakers say they're all pretty much fed up with this.
Do we know the why behind the fires? Is it like one thing, or is it not able to be kind of all the causes be put in one bucket?
Well, it's not just one thing, but there is one thing that is constantly brought up, and that's lithium batteries. And our cell phones are powered by this. Millions of things are powered by it, but they're hidden in a lot of products. And it's not always clear that the products contain these things, and they ended up in the scrapyard, and then they end up in that shredder, and then catches fire, and it's a real problem to deal with once they catch fire. They're hard to put out.
And you mentioned local officials unhappy about this, and some have actually gone as far as they want EMR shut down, right?
Yeah, after this most recent fire, a lot of people have kind of said, you know what? We've given you some time. Enough is enough. You've spent all the patience that we have. One of those people is Assemblyman Bill Moen. He's been working on regulations for the industry, and he told me EMR just simply is not holding up its end of the bargain on safety.
We had an understanding that things would get better. And what's obvious now is that we've given them the time through this MOU process to do what they say they do. And Friday was the first instance of us putting that to the test, and it did not pass the test.
The push from these officials to try to close EMR down then leads us into Tuesday, when employees from EMR rallied outside Camden City Hall trying to keep the yard open. What happened there?
Dozens of workers, they marched to City Hall and they protested outside demanding to keep the site open, keep their jobs. They wanted to speak with the mayor, who was not there at the time. Kareem Anderson was speaking on behalf of the group, and he says he, as well as many of the guys there, are formerly incarcerated, and this is their livelihood.
We want to speak to the mayor. We want to speak to Norcross. We want to speak to all the top officials. Everybody that feel like they want to shut EMR down, we have a problem with that. We're going to fight for our job.
Kareem also says the fires aren't their fault, that something needs to be done to regulate these batteries that are causing most of the trouble. They just want to keep their jobs.
Also in New Jersey, Tuesday night was primary night, and Democratic Senator Cory Booker, who ran unopposed in the primary, now has a Republican opponent he'll be facing in November. Who is it?
Justin Murphy. He's an attorney, a former Navy veteran, no stranger to running for office, albeit though with some limited success. He's a former committee member in Tabernacle, Burlington County. He finished third in the Senate primary in 2024. He had two unsuccessful runs for the House more than 15 years ago. You know, I've seen reports about his campaign account not looking so great at -$23. He's got a lot of work to do, and a Republican hasn't won a general for the Senate in New Jersey in over 50 years. It's going to be a real uphill battle against Senator Booker.
And then we had a couple of interesting primaries, specifically on the Democratic side in the 2nd and 12th congressional districts in New Jersey. What did we learn there?
Well, Cape May Mayor Zach Mullick won a pretty heated primary in the 2nd. So the Democrat there will take on incumbent Jeff Van Drew, a former Democrat turned Republican. And this has been considered somewhat of a safe Republican seat, but the Democrats think Van Drew is a bit vulnerable and they can take him out with a strong turnout in sort of a blue wave kind of election, as some people are predicting. Then in the 12th, a dozen candidates in there. In the end, we have a doctor, a plastic surgeon with some military experience, Dr. Adam Hamawi. He's going to have to answer some tough questions, though. He has a controversial background in history with a Muslim cleric, a guy known as the Blind Sheik. The Sheik was convicted of organizing a bombing at the World Trade Center in 1993. That's a pretty safe seat, pretty blue district. Bonnie Watson Coleman decided not to run for re-election. She's getting a little bit older now, and it's going to be most likely a Democratic win.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. KYW South Jersey reporter Mike Daugherty joining us. Time for another break. We will continue on with the Week in Philly right after this.
For months, people have been asking the same question. Is Philadelphia ready?
Is it a challenge? Absolutely.
But is it one the city of Philadelphia can meet? Absolutely.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly, and the World Cup is just days away. Of course, Philadelphia is a host city, and this week the city and organizers wanted everyone to know they are ready. For more, let's bring in KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb. And Pat, the first game here will be June 14th. And what was the message from everyone that spoke on Tuesday?
We're ready. How could you even suggest that we're not? Everybody said the same thing. Everyone's asking if we're ready. Of course we're ready.
When the world comes to Philadelphia, we're always ready.
So how did the city prepare for an event like this? Like, what were some of the steps taken?
Well, it's an all-city effort. That means every department contributed their part, and they worked with the host committee and dozens of federal, state, and regional agencies to manage crowds, traffic, safety. They held drills and exercises, tabletop exercises. They invested in technology. They have language translating body-worn cameras for the cops. And on the big day, the 4th, the round of 16 match, in addition to all the other events going on in the city, there will be hundreds of law enforcement on duty.
So what are some of the things that are going to be available to people coming to town for the World Cup or that live here and plan to go to the games or the surrounding events?
Fan Fest is the big thing. It's free. It's at Lemon Hill for 39 days, the whole tournament, not just while the games are here, and just announced, 4 hospitality hubs. So visitors have a place to stop, use the restroom, get water, sunscreen, first aid, bug spray, maps, snacks, anything they might need as they're walking from Center City to Lemon Hill.
Now, with all these visitors in town, they will probably also do a lot of sightseeing outside of soccer. Maybe they'll want to check out the President's House on Independence Mall. And the controversy surrounding the slavery exhibits there were back in the news this week, Pat. First, remind us of the backstory here.
Yeah, the President's House was the first national park exhibit devoted to slaves. It tells the story of the 9 people George Washington kept enslaved here in Philadelphia while this was the capital during his presidency. The exhibit was created and paid for by the city, and it educated visitors for more than 15 years. Then last year, when President Trump took office, one of his first executive orders was to remove anything from national parks that disparaged the founding fathers. Now, owning slaves, not one of George Washington's many fine qualities. And so people feared that the President's House might be targeted. And indeed, it took a year. But in January, the park removed, with no notice, all the interpretive panels and videos that made the exhibit what it was. So the city immediately sued to have them put back. And the federal district court judge agreed. She wrote quite a striking opinion comparing the dismantling of the exhibit to George Orwell's 1984 and how the Ministry of Truth in that novel alters history as it sees fit. The Park Service got about half the exhibit restored when the Trump administration appealed and the restoration stopped. So it's sitting there diminished.
So that brings us to Tuesday. There was a hearing in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. What was argued?
So the court finally heard the appeal after 2 months of briefs and so forth. It was a 3-judge panel, one judge appointed by George Bush, one by Barack Obama, and one by Donald Trump in his first term. And it was, as appeals often are, dry and technical, and really hard to tell where the judges stood. They questioned both sides vigorously.
So when could we get a decision, and what's next here, or is this just status quo until we hear something?
Yeah, they didn't say when they would decide, but the city made a point of saying they expect 1.5 million visitors this summer coming to see the historic area and see the President's House.
It's a complicated case, but the issue of documented history being removed at this critical time was what we feel is most important.
And if the city is denied what it believes is its right to tell its own history, it would amount to irreparable harm. So they are arguing for a quick decision in this case.
And we will keep an eye on that. Thank you very much, Pat. KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb joining us once again. Time for another break. The Week in Philly continues right after this. The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles and finally take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic at HRV from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com best value brand.
It sounds terrible, but like, thank God it's over.
Super excited to play with my childhood team.
The slow pain of just the in and the out.
It's time, you know, better late than never. We're right on time.
We didn't really know, and that really wasn't our focus as a team.
Obviously, I know this ain't heaven, but, you know, it's close to it.
We are back on the Week in Philly, and on Monday, what everyone had been anticipating finally became official. The Eagles traded star wide receiver A.J. Brown to the New England Patriots. In return, the Eagles get a 2028 first-round pick as well as a fifth-rounder in 2027, and Brown gets to play for his childhood favorite team. For more on this, let's bring in Dave Uram. And Dave, how did we get here? I am still genuinely a little confused how this situation with the Eagles reached critical mass.
Let's just break it down simplistically. Eagles general manager Howie Roseman, in his media availability with beat reporters after the trade was made on Monday, pretty much told them that this is something that AJ was desiring. It appears the Eagles were obviously respecting that, but they needed to get a first-round pick in return, and they did get that. There have been different rumors about AJ's relationship with Jalen Hurts. AJ did an exclusive interview with the 7 p.m. in Brooklyn podcast, the interview conducted by Maria Taylor from NBC Sports.
People just grow apart. Nothing happened between me and him or our families or wives or anything. Nothing like that ever happened. You know, life happens, you know, and, you know, you just look up sometimes and you find yourself drifting away, you know, and that's fine. And I think both parties accepted that.
Brown said to Maria that their relationship is not as close as it was previously, but AJ indicated that he still has a lot of love for Jalen. And Jalen, at his media availability during the first week of OTAs, spoke very highly of AJ and very congratulatory of AJ's recent wedding.
We're focused on learning the offense. It really doesn't change in terms of our approach to improve. There's an if, obviously been a lingering thing, but you know, none can replace all the greatness that we achieve together.
So their relationship's not as good. They clearly have respect for one another. But this feels like, Matt, that combination of everything is basically what led to here. I don't know how much the AJ-Jalen relationship factored into it. There's been reporting that it's part of it. We don't know. It's all speculation. But I think, simplistically put, AJ, as Howie Roseman, the Eagles general manager, told beat reporters, desired this change.
Where would you put AJ Brown when it comes to the best receivers in Eagles history? Because he's certainly in the conversation. I think the one thing that hurts him is only 4 years, but I think he is definitely in that top five somewhere.
I agree with you. Definitely in the elite conversation, top five, top 10. There hasn't been that many champions in the long history of the Eagles, and he's a champion, and he's a big reason why they won that Super Bowl championship and the 2024 season. His statistics in those four seasons are very good. All of them over 1,000 yards. The first 2 years, he was outstanding. His numbers dipped a little bit in 2024 and as well as 2025. And he's been a great receiver, great receiver. Whether you think he's losing a step or whatnot, he still is a very, very good receiver. So I think he's definitely in the elite conversation. And I think this is another thing too. And I totally get that there are a lot of folks who are frustrated. You know, this is a big deal for AJ because AJ grew up a New England Patriots fan. He grew up in Mississippi, but he grew up a fan of the Patriots dynasty, Tom Brady, Julian Edelman. So this is a dream come true. But at the same time, I think it's a shame that it came down to this, even though I understand people's frustration, because he's still a star player. He still had years left on his contract. They signed him to that contract, not so that they could trade him at this point. They signed him to that contract so that he could essentially be an Eagle for the rest of his career, and he's not going to be. And you could make the argument that they could certainly win another Super Bowl if they continued to play together. So it feels like that there's more to accomplish that they're not going to get to accomplish. And that's a shame.
So now looking forward for the Eagles, do you think they have the firepower to replace him in the wide receiver room? Obviously, Devontae Smith moves up to the number one receiver. I don't think anybody has any problems with that. But overall, where do you think that group is now as compared to May 31st?
I think it's too soon to tell. You know, obviously, Devontae's the number one. Devontae's been a really good receiver in the league.
I'm just going out there and do my job. I mean, regardless, whatever, however you want to look at it, one, two, three, four, whatever you want to look at it. At the end of the day, we all have jobs and got to go out there and do it.
I want to see how the rest of the room performs because they're losing A.J. Brown. Again, he's a really good player. So are all those players, and they have a lot of depth in that room now. Dontavian Wicks, Hollywood Brown, a bunch of different players. Elijah Moore, a bunch of different players who are coming into the Eagles, who are new to the Eagles. They drafted Mekhi Lemon, who could certainly be really productive. You know, obviously, they had Darius Cooper coming back from last year. Johnny Wilson's coming back from injury. There's a lot of different players who could step up and play a role on this team. But are they going to replace A.J. Brown? I don't know the answer to that question. But I am intrigued to see all the depth that they have in that room of the players and even more that I just mentioned.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave. KYW's Dave Uram joining us. Time for another break. We will have more of this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio right after this. Final segment on this edition of The Week in Philly, and we want to finish with a great story out of Delaware County. A student athlete making the jump from Delaware County Community College to the Ivy League, Yale University. For more on this, let's bring in KYW's Justin Udo. Justin, tell us about Fatu Kaba.
Yes, Fatu Kaba, she has a really cool, fun, and interesting, good local story. I was able to talk to her last year whenever she first went All-American for the first time, and the story around that was Delaware County Community College does not have a track or a field, so for athletes to be able to rise up to that level and go All-American, be some of the best in the country at Division III was just quite the story, and she not only did it last year when All-American, but she won Nationals this year for the triple jump, and she also went to the national meet for the 100 meter dash as well as the long jump.
Having that title really means a lot. You can't be sad about your season ending when you're a national champion, so it was great.
Now, you mentioned this, but I think the thing that really makes her track success even more impressive is the idea that she did not have the type of facilities most athletes have at the college level. Can you dig into this a little more?
Yeah, as I was saying, where they don't have a track and a field at Delaware County Community College. And I know having run track in undergrad, I felt at a disadvantage not having an indoor track, but not having the facilities all around can make things really tough. So they work out at local high schools. They get up at ungodly hours to train, to get into different facilities. But where there's a will, there's a way. And that's really Kaba's story.
Pushes me to work harder, to just be the best I can with what I have.
And despite all the success she has had, she does not plan to compete at Yale, right? As far as, you know, running for the track and field team there, but she really wants to concentrate on her studies. What is she looking to study?
She applied and got accepted into Yale, one of the Ivies, one of the first universities in the country. And she says while she's there, she really does want to concentrate on those academics, Matt.
The end of my track career would be at DCCC.
She's a psychology major and looking at adding neuroscience as a concentration.
I'm trying to decide whether I want to go into master's or my PhD. So we'll be exploring that at Yale as well.
Do you think she's leaving the door open at all, though, that if she gets that itch, because she's obviously got the talent?
I talked to her about that because being at a community college, you're only using 2 years of eligibility. She has 2 years left. She said she was done with it. But like I said, having been a former athlete and myself, I could hear it in her voice that she might have another year to, under her belt to see what she can prove at that next level.
And we will keep an eye on it. Thank you so much, Justin. That's KYW's Justin Udo joining us. And that is going to do it for this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. This week's episode was produced by Sabrina Boyd-Circa and Brian Seltzer. My name is Matt Leon. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the rest of your weekend.